Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. How are you today? Welcome to this week's edition of Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. It's a pleasure to have you here. What's going on there with the music? There we go. That's done now, all right? It's the 26th of June. Okay, the week before July 4th, to put it in perspective, 2021. And we have a nice show to start the week. We have a school psychologist and educational consultant who just wrote a new book for Solution Tree, you know, the publishing house and the professional development company. His name's Alan Mendler, and we're going to talk about motivating students who don't care. And I think that's going to be an extra special challenge this year, more so than ever, as we come off the pandemic. And I'll talk about that with someone who knows a lot more about it than I do, Al Mendler, and he'll be with us in just a second. I wanted to remind you that Education Talk Radio is now a part of the American Consortium for Equity in Education. That's over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. Okay, please go over there. You'll see our wonderful magazine called Equity in Access. It's an online journal, 95 pages this month, brand new issue up there, all right? And I'm telling you, when you see what we do over there about equity and access and all the wonderful contributors that we have, both in terms of advertising and editorial, you're going to be very, very impressed. Everything we do over there is free, including we archive all our podcasts there. So please go over. And if you'd like your voice heard, get in touch with us. Join with us again over at ace-ed.org, our consortium for equity. And without further ado, let me bring on Alan Mendler. Hi, should I call you Al or Alan?
Absolutely. How you doing?
Call you Al? Can I call you Al?
Yep.
As Paul Simon sang so much better than I did. Okay? You can call me Al.
Okay.
You got it. Hey, Al, and you're in Rochester today, right?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Trying to keep cool. Very hot
right
here.
Oh, I live in Maine, east of you. And it's going up to 93 even here today, okay? So
We're
going to be stuck with it for a few days. But, you know, you're in northern New York. I'm in northern New England. We moan and groan all winter about the cold. Now we can moan and groan about the heat. There we go.
Yeah, I don't moan and groan about it, Larry. I love it, actually. This is a little bit too warm, but that's, I'm not a complainer about the heat.
Good man. I like that. Okay. Al, tell us your background. Okay. I know you're a school psychologist, education consultant. Just give people your brief resume.
Sure. Okay. Well, I've been in the world of education for 40 plus years. I started out as a junior high school social studies teacher. Junior high school back in those days.
Yeah, that's exactly me.
Then,
welcome to the world. Yeah. Same thing.
Yeah. Hey, awesome.
Yeah.
And then I became a school psychologist, which I've done for really throughout the lion's share of my career.
Mm-hmm.
And really in that capacity, I've seen lots of, lots of regular ed, special ed students and, largely students with issues of one sort or another, either academic or behavioral issues. And my focus, rather than directly dealing with the student, which I've done a fair amount of, I started thinking relatively early in my career that, if we in classroom can do some things differently, maybe we can get some better results with
mm-hmm.
some of these kids. That sort of led me on the journey of writing and, interacting and doing workshops with teachers.
Right, and you work all over the country. I just want to make that clear. Do you want to give everybody your contact info? Okay,
sure,
or website or whatever, just so they have it. Go ahead.
Sure. Yeah. They can reach out at tlc-sems.com if they like, or at Alan Mendler.
At Alan Mendler. Okay, that's Alan Mendler. Okay, now the book you just wrote, you've written, Randy, go ahead. Yeah, you were going to say.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so the book I just wrote is called Motivating Students Who Don't Care, and it's actually, Larry, the second edition of that book.
I know that. I know that. I actually did see that right on the cover of the book that they sent me, and I think that's great, which means it's been a very popular book. And I got to ask you something, Alan, all right? I've been reading, we're coming off the pandemic. Your book would be good, okay, excellent as a matter of fact, if this were a normal year, okay, that we're ending and coming into. But in fact, mm-hmm. it is not a normal year that we're ending or coming into. And you're a psychologist. I'm not. All right. But I've been reading about something which seems to be a malaise around the whole country post-pandemic. All right. And it's called, I think you probably know this term, languishing. That most people are kind of, they feel a little depressed, but it's really just a sense of languish. That's what psychologists call it. And adults aren't that different from kids in that regard. All right. And this sense of languish, all right, it has to be spoken about, okay, if that's what you want to call it, whatever you want to define it as, because kids and teachers, I might add, are going to have to go back to school and get re-energized, if I may. Things were tough the last 18 months. And I'm just curious, as you look at motivating students this coming year, what are your thoughts that pop out?
Well, you know, Larry, there's been a huge upheaval in all of our lives, which I think
yes.
is responsible for, the term that you're referring to as languishing. And when you think about adults, certainly our lives have been dramatically affected. But if you look at kids, I mean, everything within their life was affected, their friendships, their connection with grandparents, the ability to go out on the playground and play. I mean, you know, you name it, it was impacted. And I think it's going to be very, very important for us educators to not only recognize that, but make room in the classroom, and quite a bit of room for that matter, to address it. And probably the best way of addressing it is to let kids talk about it, you know, to ask them, you know, how was the pandemic for you? You know, like, and share how it was for yourself as the educator, you know, how it was impacted. Maybe even share some of the positives that were experienced as a result of it. Although many of the kids will no doubt share how their lives were disrupted and probably express their appreciation for getting their life back again. But
yeah.
at first, I think there needs to be some grieving about, the loss of a lot of opportunity to live life as they previously knew it.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting, and we all do the same thing. We talk about generically, and I'm making air quotes, the kids. But the kids are different in a rich suburban home, and you certainly know this, Al, than an urban high-rise in the Bronx in New York City or a rural area in eastern Kentucky. When we say the kids, we have to really know the kids we're talking about, okay, because they're going to have different reasons why they might not be motivated. And we, of course, one of the key things is many of kids, particularly of color, okay, have lost relatives. Although we're coming
yes.
out of this and all's well, you know this, of course. I mean, 600,000 people died. Okay,
yep.
People lost relatives and friends and uncles and whatever you want to say. It's going to be a tough year to come back. Yeah,
absolutely.
So motivation.
And that gets back to that sort of sense of grieving that
yeah.
you know that we're discussing. And I think you make a very, very valid point. That said, you know, I think no matter what class you're in or what your home life is like, I think it's fair to assume that everybody's life was impacted in a pretty dramatic way.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody, I would advise every teacher to, you know, start out the school year by first and foremost, welcoming your kids. I mean, just letting them know, you know,
yeah.
how much you miss them and
yeah.
How excited you are to have them back, you know. And then, you know, before we sort of move on, you know, we spend some time revisiting some of those moments that for some were horrendously tragic, but for all were highly disruptive.
It sure was. And again, everybody, Al's book, Al Mendler's book, Motivating Students Who Don't Care. And it does have, this has a lot of proven strategies in it to engage all learners. And I want to say what Al said before, it's the second edition. Okay, and it's from Solution Tree. All right, so please check it all out. Al, let me ask you something. And by the way, there's a zillion suggestions in there, almost every page, okay, with a good suggestion, a practical suggestion to use. Which brings me to the question, all this coming, as you look at teacher education, all right, how has that changed, or how should it change, if I may, to meet these needs? Because at least when, probably when you and I were both in college, all right, many, many, many years ago, too many, a lot of many's in there for both of us, I'm afraid, okay?
That's the truth.
Yeah, but it was, you were a history teacher as well, so it was mostly history classes that I taught and a few intro classes, ed psychology, that sort of stuff. All right, one class, boom, done. Okay, and I don't think they ever in my entire 4 years mentioned a school counselor or a school librarian. I don't think that was ever even mentioned. Okay, so my point is, knowing what we know from a school psychologist point of view, which is very important now because social emotional learning has moved to the forefront. Okay, how should we look at changing teacher education? There you go, Al. Change, send that one. I'll give you a doctorate from the University of Larry. Go ahead.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think the number one is to really put an emphasis on what the basic needs of kids really is about, and really what underlies their either desire to be motivated or to behave themselves. And largely, it's about addressing those basic needs for connection, confidence, control, fun, and attention. You know, like we all have those needs, kids in particular have those. And to the degree that they feel connected to the place that they're at, that they believe they can be successful at that place, that they have some say in what goes on there, and that in which it's sort of an enjoyable experience more often than not, to the extent that those factors are present, the stage is going to be set for kids to be interested and eager to learn and to behave themselves. And the flip side is, to the degree that those needs are not addressed, they're likely to express their disappointment or dissatisfaction in a variety of ways that can either express itself as not doing much work or even worse, maybe being disruptive.
Yeah. Do you think it's going to be really brutal this year?
I think it really depends a lot. I mean, most kids are excited to get back to school. You know,
yeah,
I think
agree.
That's the reality. They want to be with their friends. They want some sense of normalcy. And, to the extent that that's provided, I think it's going to be, less difficult. I think it's useful, for all of us educators to, think about what makes us want to be in a certain place. Like what makes folks want to go to a certain store? Or visit, a certain place. What motivates us to do that? And for the most part, I don't know how you are, Larry, but I think most people want to visit places that feel welcoming, have items in there or have things in there that they need, right, or want. To the extent that, that kids can experience some sense of success and a feeling of pleasure within the environment that they're at, those to me are the sort of the key factors. We need not only to focus our attention on giving them room to express whatever sadness, grief, et cetera, that they have, but we also, we also need to turn on our own sense of enthusiasm and excitement and energy, maybe in double time, or more, in order to really awaken theirs and to sort of reignite their enthusiasm.
Yeah, there's ways to do it. There's some great solutions in your book. I want to ask, because there are so many things that you talked about in your book, and I can go down, if I may. I had a different page open. Hold on. I just want to go down the names of the chapters, because there's solutions for each thing. Chapter one is emphasize effort, if I may, Al. Chapter two is create confidence and hope. Chapter three is value, involvement, and influence. Value, involvement, and influence. Four is build relationships, and five is spark enthusiasm for learning, and under each of those are a million solutions. Can you prioritize any of that?
The first one is effort, and so let me start with that. I think they're all equally important, but, the reality is that most of the time, what we focus on primarily as educators are outcomes. You know, we want kids to achieve the standard, whatever that standard might be, or master the curriculum. While that is important, what's more important is to invite success on the part of kids. And the best way to do that is to find ways to reward their effort. You know, so I think the primary thing that jumps out to me when I think about motivation is compare kids to themselves rather than to a certain arbitrary standard or to each other. Grading, for example, evaluating, giving feedback ought to be based on how one is doing relative to themselves rather than relative to each other. And so when you put the emphasis on effort, you know, effort is the way towards outcome. You know, if I start out as a student being able to only read three-letter words, the goal needs to be, as a teacher, getting me to read four-letter words, even if the curriculum tells me that at the end of the year they have to read eight-letter words. You know what I'm saying? And so, to the extent that we emphasize that notion of your being compared to who you are and that you're great, et cetera, will depend upon how you do relative to yourself, that's a huge trigger to provide positive motivation.
It is, and I have to ask you something, okay? I'm just using your example, and I'm curious about this. If a kid is, let's use your example, three-letter words, you want to get them to four-letter words, the curriculum says they should be reading five-letter words, all right? But the teacher the next year, because that kid passed, is expecting that they now know five-letter words. And this has always been a challenge in education, because you do try to see each kid individually. But is it fair to the kid to hold them to that standard, I'm just going to say, in fourth grade, okay, but the curriculum in the school holds them at a different standard, okay, right, as they enter fifth? And, you know, in other words, you gave them a B for the effort and the trying, and they were motivated, they were happy, they did better. I get that, okay, and I love it, okay? It makes a kid feel good. But what about that next teacher? What about the next curriculum over the course of time? And I'm always thinking, but this is interesting, Al. You know, I still do have a friend who used to teach at community college near Detroit, and she was a magnificent professor, and she would get kids, a lot of them from Detroit public schools, who would graduate public schools, you know this story, get into the community college, all right? Mm-hmm. And they were reading at a fifth grade level.
Right.
Here they are in a community college. Now, the teachers, some of them probably just said, I'm going to pass the kid along. Others probably followed what you did. This kid is really trying. I'm going to move them on. But in the end, it turned out to be a disservice to that poor kid. How do you balance that? That's actually the question I'm asking. How do you balance that? Because your point's well taken.
Well, one of the things I talk about in the book is how, you know, you can't really cover a whole bunch of different things with a grade, with one grade. You know, it's hard to, you know, it's hard for one grade to reflect a person's effort and their achievement and the level that they're at. And so I think there need to be multiple ways of doing evaluations. I mean, I taught at a community college also, and at first I was absolutely blown away by how difficult it was for many of my students to write. I mean, when they turned in an assignment, the first one or two that I read, I was amazed at how poor their skills were. You know, that said, I mean, as a teacher, I got to pick them up where they are. You know, they're there. I didn't choose for them to be there. But I'm at the, you know, if I don't address their learning needs, then I'm going to get, you know, disengaged, disaffected learners, basically.
Yeah, you're right.
And so, you know, I mean, I think it's imperative for all of us to kind of know where we start, you know, with our kids. I can't assume that if a kid comes into my eighth grade class or fourth grade class, to borrow your example, and they got a B in their third grade or whatever, I can't assume that they met a certain specific standard that enabled them to achieve that B. I gotta find out, you know, through whether it be testing or getting to know the student. I gotta find out where they're coming from, and you know, ultimately, I think it's useful. Worst case scenario, I advise people have two grades. You know, one grade reflects efforts and the comparison of yourself to you, and the other grade reflects achievement, what level you're actually functioning at. While that skill doesn't completely resolve the nuances that are involved in learning, I think it takes the conversation a longer way towards expressing to each of us what our kids know and what their needs might be.
Yeah. Al, you are one of these, and I want you to talk about this, because there is a serious, serious shortage. I mean, you're talking, I'm going to say, of guidance counselors and educational psychologists. A serious, serious shortage. And we are, if I may, we're all doing this, we're asking teachers to do the best they can be psychologists, which is something they're really not trained in, okay, because of the shortage of trained personnel, okay? And what are we supposed to do with this? I mean, because all your suggestions are great, they're important, okay, I love them, all right? But, you know, how do you assess the school psychology situation?
Well, you know, I think obviously it would be great if we had more mental health people. And there are, to the credit of many schools, actually, most recently at least, there's been a bit more emphasis placed on getting folks like school psychologists and social workers.
Oh, we got to. We have to.
Yeah, right. I mean, so clearly that's important. All of that said, I think, you know, the teacher nowadays, you know, to be a successful, effective teacher, I mean, you know, you got to be addressing what those psychological needs are.
Yeah, you do.
You know,
you do.
And, you know, that's why there's so much emphasis these days placed upon the importance of building a relationship with your kids and, you know, letting them get to know you and understanding who they are and, you know, knowing what they're into so that you can connect with them around places of familiarity and excitement for them. I tell teachers all the time, you know, you got to know what kids are interested in. And if you're not so sure, well, you know, find out. I mean, listen to their radio station once in a while, you know, and find out who's, you know, who the latest rapper is.
Suggestion.
You know, know the score of the game last night, even if you're not particularly interested in, you know, in hockey or whatever the sport is, you know, at the moment. Know a little bit about, you know, what's going on in their world, basically, you know, and so, you know, if you're willing to put your foot or, you know, dip your toes into their world, they're much more apt to dip their toes into yours, you know. And, you know, while it's not fair to expect everybody to be a psychologist, increasingly
no, it is not.
That is a part of the job.
That's why your book's
important. Yeah, you know. I'm pleased, actually, to see more of an emphasis in education now on things like mindfulness and meditation.
Of course.
You know, when I wrote one of my earlier books back in the early 90s, there were school districts that refused to invite me in, literally, because there were places or suggested strategies for teaching kids how to relax and how to let go of the stresses within their
lives. We're ahead of your time.
Yeah. and that was at that time considered, you know, heretical in a number of schools. You know, nowadays, thankfully, it's many
everywhere.
Places part of the curriculum. You know,
it's everywhere.
And I think that's a good thing.
And I'll get back to what I said before. I still believe that teacher education is behind what's needed in the classroom these days. The classrooms are changing. The curriculums are changing, especially after the last 18 months. And the schools, the colleges really have to jump on this. I'm curious, when you go into this, again, everybody, Al Mendler, when you go into a school district, and teachers from all over the country, amazingly, are kind of the same, all right? Well, when you go in and talk about motivating students and all that sort of thing, what's the feedback you hear? Not on what you're suggesting, but what are the challenges that they all face? Just the generic thing that pops into your mind.
Well, I mean, the challenge that most people face is that they have increasing numbers of kids who, you know, come to them with just a diversity of needs that range from, as you mentioned earlier, you know, kids who are, you know, have everything going for them, and yet their entitlement or that sense of entitlement gets them, you know, to feel like they don't have to really work very hard in order to, to achieve. All the way down to those kids who are, you know, who have virtually nothing, you know, and who are homeless and who are preoccupied primarily with survival needs, you know. And so, you know, there are a range of students that that have all kinds of out-of-school issues that impact their lives. And, you know, what I do when I'm with educators is I acknowledge that. I basically tell them that, you know, 70, 80, maybe up to 90% of the challenging behaviors that they face really are not of their making. I mean,
That's right.
Functioning of all sorts of other things out there. So given that, I mean, let's face the reality, guys, and the reality is that our voice really accounts for a pretty minor percentage of what kids are going to hear and take in, you know, and that's why it's especially important for each and every one of us to make our voice as interesting, melodic, harmonious, and I would even venture to say as seductive as we possibly can, because there are always other voices and issues that compete for the hearts, minds, and souls of our kids. And if ours does not capture their spirit, their enthusiasm, their desire, you know, somebody else's will, be it the, you know, gang leaders or, you know, some other less savory kind of, you know, organization looking for new recruits out there, you know. So, you know, that's really what we're up against. You know, we all know that there are lots of factors that we have very little control over, you know, and yet we have to work within that world, you know, and the better we do working within that world, the more likely it is that we'll have some success with our with those kids. I also tell teachers in a way, you know, look at school as try to make your classroom an island that, you know, sort of, you know, it's an island that gets a fair number of kids away from their reality, you know, like make your reality its own reality. And if you factor in the sort of basic needs, like I mentioned before, of connection, control, confidence, attention, and you reflect those needs within your curriculum as well as within your interactions with your students, that gives you the best chance, really, of success with your kids and, you know, getting kids on a regular basis to be more motivated for you, you know, at the very least, within your environment.
You know, that was beautifully said. I got to tell you, and sometimes we do forget we are one voice among many and one pressure among many, all right? So to cherish every moment and to make it work and get that kid motivated and happy really can make a difference. Al, this was great. I thank you so much, sir.
Oh, well, you're very welcome, Larry. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. It's well worth everybody's time to hear from you. And I would recommend to you, since you're in Rochester, you pick up the latest issue of The Atlantic, which has a giant article on Rochester and Kodak.
Awesome. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Run to the library. Get it. It's free there. Okay? Brand new issue. Okay? An amazing story, by the way. Okay? Thank you, Al. You take care, my friend. Be safe.
Thank you. You're doing some great work, Larry. Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
As are you. I appreciate the compliment. Thanks, Al. Bye-bye.
Yep. Bye.
Al Mendler, everybody. Dr. Alan Mendler, school psychologist, educational consultant. His new book is From Solution Tree. It's a second edition. Motivating Students Who Don't Care. How important is that this year? Check it all out. Okay, again, Solution Tree, Motivating Students Who Don't Care. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org, just like we always do. All right, all our podcasts are over there. Our magazine is over there, et cetera. Join with us. Like Al said, teacher voice is very important, and we want to allow you to have your voice. So if you'd like to do a podcast with us, if you'd like to write an article for us, go over to ace-ed, get in touch with us, all right? Thank you for listening. My name's Larry Jacobs. Have a good day.